Committee members received copies of the budget yesterday, and I'm requesting that Gina Weidrich call the roll.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Hales?
Here. So I want to invite the leadership of the Portland Development Commission to present the proposed budget.
Well, thank you, commissioners. Good morning. Going to be a warm day in Portland, so nice to be inside, I think. I'm going to start by pointing out that...
Tell us who you are, Scott.
I'm Scott Andrews. I'm chairman of the Portland Development Commission. Sorry. This budget really represents the stabilized operations at PDC. I think you know well that we have, over the last couple of years, tried to size the organization to meet the future revenue goals, and went through the last RIF this last year, gone from 130-plus employees down to 95. We think we can maintain that over the next several years, given the TIF projections and other projections. But it has taken some time to work through the costs associated with downsizing it. But this budget actually reflects all of that, including the commissioner's goals at PDC to lower all the overhead and administrative costs by 30% over the last couple of years. As always, at this point of the year, the budget includes some big-ticket items that are being carried forward from last year's budget. That's one of the revisions that you would see from the last budget that we provided you. Things like the Veterans Memorial Coliseum, which is now in the hands of OMF, and I know that they're doing some work to make some make a presentation to you later in the year and make a decision on. Convention Center Hotel is moving along, but obviously is not going to happen in this fiscal year. We'll move into next. The PNCA and Daimler loans, they're agreed to. They're going to happen, but they're just not going to happen in this fiscal year, so they show up in the budget for next year. I might talk just a second about what we have seen in terms of the revival of the real estate market. Over the last 2 years, there's been really a remarkable recovery. It was recently reported that the city of Portland has the lowest office vacancy rate in the country, and we had already seen that we had one of the lowest apartment vacancy rates in the country. And that means, I think, we're going to continue to see more projects, which is a good thing because it's more jobs, and our staff is going to be busier dealing with requests for both help on projects as well as I think you'll see several market rate sales of some land that we have in inventory over the next coming years, actually. And finally, my last piece is just to remind you that we, in the last 2 years, have restructured the budget advisory process, and you're going to hear from some of the citizens who have been involved in that revised process today. We now have the Neighborhood Economic Development Leadership Group, which is overseeing the budget process for the neighborhoods, and the Central City Budget Advisory Committee with key stakeholders from the Central City and business folks that are overseeing the urban sort of part of our budget. So thank you for overseeing our work today. We really appreciate the opportunity to get together with you regularly to update you on these things, so there shouldn't be any real surprises. But I will turn it over to Patrick Quinton, our executive director, to make the presentation.
Great. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Chair Andrews. Good morning, Mayor Hales, commissioners. I'm also joined by Kimberly Branham, who's our deputy director at PDC. And at some point, you probably will hear from Tony Barnes, our budget officer, who's sitting there in the back. So we're going to walk through the budget. It's obviously a very detailed budget, so we can't go through line item by line item, but we're going to walk through the overall budget at a high level, and then we have summaries for each of the urban renewal areas, and so we can talk through whatever questions you have. Yesterday, we delivered over the budget document to you, and once again, it's not always the easiest document to work through, but when we get into the urban renewal area budgets, what we're really the place to look for the line items is in the appendix, interestingly enough. But so that appendix, and that starts on page 100 and 11. So when we get to the actual renewal area summaries, if you want to dig into the line items, that's where the actual programmatic line items start. But just at a high level, as we've been talking over the past few months about our budget, there are some key changes. I think this has been one of the years for the biggest changes in our budget, certainly in the time that I've been here. The first, most notably, is the River District. We have moved money around from our previous five-year forecast, and the biggest change was the focus of the existing River District resources on Old Town Chinatown. You've heard informally about our emerging Old Town Chinatown action plan. That this will come to council in the next few months, but it really does take roughly $50 million over the next 5 years and create opportunity funds for us to do work in Old Town Chinatown. A subset of that actually is a pot of money that we will set aside to explore some kind of pilot seismic program that we're working with Commissioner Novick on. The shift obviously moves money from other parts in the River District, and we'll talk about that in a second, but the post office project in the 10th and Yamhill line items are really the ones where you'll see the biggest change. In Lent's action plan, that actually comes to you at the end of the month. I've been briefing some of you on that, and so you'll hear more about that, but the dollars are designed to support the implementation of that. Same thing is true on the Central East side. We've once again thought about, okay, the remaining life of the Central East side, and how do we want to spend the dollars that we have and hopefully the dollars that come out of the expanded Central East side. On interstate, I think it's been widely known that we're moving an additional $20 million into affordable housing over the next 5 years, and so that required some movement in our budget, and we can get into that. Fortunately, we've been able to do most of that by shifting around existing resources, but we are adding some borrowing over the next 5 years. And then lastly, as you agreed last week, we are moving forward on exploring changes to their renewal areas, and one of the most immediate impacts will be that we will have no new resources in the Willamette Industrial Urban Renewal Area. And so we'll begin to explore the end of life for that district. So from a high level on the overall budget, we show you two slides. One is the resource picture, where the money comes from, and the second one we'll show you in a second is how we spend the overall money. As we briefed you in previous budget presentations, we are the resources that we have for the coming year really are primarily coming from existing dollars that we have from previous borrowings, as well as what we call du jour, the money that comes in on a regular basis, and it's kind of pay as you go. So that the current situation allows us to achieve our objectives in the coming year without much in new borrowings. That's the beginning fund balance, short-term debt, as you see on the pie chart here. We obviously have money coming from the City General Fund and other sources, but the primary source of funds is either money we have or money that comes in pay as you go. In terms of how this money will get spent, you can see that once again, property redevelopment dominates our budget. A lot of that comes from big ticket items that, as the chair mentioned, that are carrying forward from previous years, but also new projects. But so when we go through the urban renewal area summaries, we can talk about where those dollars are going. But it still remains the largest part of our budget. You can see business development, about $25 million. Infrastructure greatly reduced over previous years. A lot of that, once again, is related to specific projects. This current year, we had money going to the light rail project. We don't have that in this year. So it does vary, and it includes park projects as well as transportation projects. And we can talk about those on an urban renewal area basis. Housing, I think as we briefed you, the percentage is lower than what is the generally understood set aside. Some of that is just differences from year to year, and so we're in a down year in terms of actual housing projects. Some of that is from the size of our budget is not just TIF dollars, and so when we have a chart which walks through that, but just to the actual budget that PDC will have to spend is we have $177 million. It's less the housing as well, so it ends up being closer to about $150 million is really what PDC's expenditures are projected to be in the coming fiscal year. As we've shared previously, this is the breakdown of the set-aside. I won't walk through it, but just a few reminders about how the set-aside policy works. It's a rolling calculation, so it's not a year-by-year calculation, and it rolls up also from URAs, and each URA has specific targets. So while we're the goal is to achieve an overall 30%, It does result from decisions made on a URA by URA basis, and so you can see how we project to meet the set aside obligations over the remainder of there's life beyond 2018, 2019 on the URAs, but this is when the bulk of the dollars will get spent, and so you can see how we're tracking this right now.
Patrick, on this chart, does this incorporate the additional $20 million for Interstate?
It does. Yes, it does.
And it's clear that the additional $20 million is covered by the legal parameters of the 30% set-aside?
I think that remains to be seen right now exactly what type of projects, but I think generally speaking, yes, but we're still in conversations with Commissioner Saltzman and the Housing Bureau about what types of projects. So we're going to begin a community process around how this money is spent. And so I think it remains to be seen exactly what type of projects and what geography that will serve, but I think it's generally designed to meet the goals of the set-aside.
That's I'm not sure I understand your answer. Either it is a 30% set-aside expenditure or it is not.
I think we're counting it right now, but I think
counting it as
set-aside in a calculation. But I want to point out that we're about to embark on a process talking to the community about how the dollars – you know, how they want to see the dollars spent, and I think it could result in some dollars going into mixed use projects. So I think we're still trying to figure out how best to accomplish what we heard from community conversations around the need for more housing dollars in North and Northeast Portland.
So now I'm thoroughly confused. We have a 30% set aside policy with clear guidelines. And they have citywide expectations and district expectations. Are you saying to us that through a community process, we may choose to spend this money in a way that is not consistent with the 30% guidelines?
I think it's possible, although I'm not necessarily predicting it, that it may not be 100% of the $20 million goes into 0 to 60% and as it's defined by the set aside. It may be. It's just that when we've had conversations with community representatives, there doesn't seem to be a clear answer yet as to whether the housing need that we're trying to address is 0 to 30, 30 to 60, 60 to 80, right? And so I think there's that. And then I also think that there's a strong desire to have specific catalytic projects happen that are mixed-use projects in specific locations. And so whether the dollars are 100% housing or whether they support, community center or retail or something on a first floor. So I think that's where that's where it's still an unknown about whether it's 100% of the dollars or whether it's 85% of the dollars. So I think that's what comes out of it. My prediction would be it would all be eligible, but I don't want to presume what the community process is going to come out want.
But with all due respect, I don't think a community process trumps the city council policy. And what I've heard loud and clear from the community is they want it targeted to 0 to 30, which may not be possible given the economics of this housing. But our current policy is 0 to 60, and my understanding would be that if this housing is to be spent on something that doesn't fit within the 30% set-aside, which is something that community has held our feet to the fire on, that you would come to the council for a change in policy and not do it through a community process.
I would come to the council with a change in policy if that, in fact, is the outcome of the community process. I think, as Patrick's saying, we don't want to prejudge the outcome. And if it requires coming to council for an exception to meet what the community's desires are with this additional $20 million, then I will do that.
Well, just to be clear, Dan, we've never done that. We have never gone to a community and said we're going to accept an exception to the 30% set-aside. We've taken lots of flack for adhering to the citywide principles. So I think it would be disingenuous to start a community process and to say that we're going to be open to all kinds of community suggestions, including mixed-use development, and to use housing dollars for a non-30% purpose, unless that is the intent of this money, in which case we ought to be clear at the front end what the intent is. But my understanding was it was a 30% set-aside money, and we've always considered 30% as a floor and not a ceiling.
Yeah, and I mean, once again, I do think there's a possibility that if it comes out that, let's say, some percentage of the money is requested to be spent on something other than 0 to 60, it would not be counted as set aside. So instead of being at 44% or 47% by the end of the life of the district, we might be at 42%. So I think that's all we're talking about, is that it may not end up being a full count towards a set aside. But it is meant to be addressing housing issues, and I think we'd like to hear, confirm exactly how the community views it before presuming that all of it, all $20 million, is counted toward the set-aside, as the way I would put it. But I don't see us. We're going to come back and talk about this. I don't think it's going to just, we're going to go off and spend the money. And most of it's programmed in future years, so it's going to be part of future budget conversations, exactly how this money gets programmed.
I I've had lots of briefings with people from PALF, from PCRI, lots of organizations, and their clear expectation is this money is going to address low-income families in their district, and they expect us to work with community-based organizations. And if we're going to open this up to a community conversation and come back and say we're going to do something else, I just think we ought to be prepared for some backlash, because I think the expectation is this is going to be consistent with our guidelines.
Well, we're still going to overperform our housing goal by a considerable margin, and I guess.
No, but Charlie, that's with all due respect, and we've had that debate right since the 30%. It is a floor.
Right.
We it is not overperforming. It has always been intended to be a floor, and we sometimes spend above it. It is simply a floor.
Okay.
And all the groups that you've talked about are all included in a draft community process for this. So I think we're going to have a conversation with all the organizations plus additional stakeholders that you've mentioned. So.
Okay. Go on.
We'll go into the URA by URA descriptions. I just want to also just show you from a high level perspective how we view programmatically how we spend our dollars. It's a little bit of the same cut as the pie chart, but it does talk about not just within our neighborhood expenditures, but how we spend it relative to things like community capacity building or business growth or commercial districts. And then you can see on the traded sector side, we have things like our job growth versus entrepreneurship. So we do track it this way programmatically. Our URA cut of our budget is kind of one way of thinking about it. We try to think about things programmatically across URAs and both TIF and non-TIF dollars, and so this is how we break it apart. And you can see examples of how we kind of group together our different programmatic initiatives. Once again, these are more programmatic. They're kind of gray distinctions as opposed to clear lines, but it helps from a operational standpoint in how PDC organizes its work to think about it that way. So we have a community capacity building and commercial district team that does this work to collectively, and so they're the ones that think about how to use these dollars most effectively. So digging into the urban renewal areas, we have ordered these by what we think are the topics of most conversation. So they're not in an alphabetical or geographic order. They are by most significant change. So we're starting with the River District. As I mentioned, the big change in the River District budget is the movement of significant dollar amounts from a number of different projects into what we call the Old Town Action Plan. If you take a look at the River District actual budget, you'll see that much of this money now resides in a commercial redevelopment loan line item. It's now the biggest line item anywhere in our budget, and what that represents is our ability to do commercial real estate loans of all different types. They can be, you know, basically the equivalent to kind of long-term grant or equity type loans, or they can be closer to market rate, but it gives us the dollars to take on 10, 12 catalytic projects within Old Town that would that we hope would unlock additional private investment throughout the neighborhood. It would of course address seismic issues as well. As our chair mentioned, we are carrying forward our PNCA loan, which has some expenditures this year, but the bulk of those dollars will go out next fiscal year. That project has already begun and represents one of our key initiatives within Old Town. It still retains money for Centennial Mills. We are actively working on a development agreement right now with Harsh Properties on that project. We would expect to have a development agreement early next fiscal year on this project and be able to then make progress on that. And we would come back, of course, with a presentation on that project. But the early signs are that we actually have a viable project, finally, for Centennial Mills that will accomplish all the objectives that we've talked about.
Before you move on, I just have a process question. It seems to me that in previous years we've received proposed budgets that have more of a breakout rather than $30 million. Are we going to get that? Could we get that, please?
Yeah, so the reason why it's structured this way is that in Old Town Chinatown we have we might have 3-4 active projects right now, but we anticipate looking at another 10 projects, but we don't know which ones they are. So that line item is a lending line item that allows us to respond to opportunities that come to us on particular projects, but they're not like PDC owned properties or a post office or something. So we don't really know exactly what the list of projects will look like in Old Town over the next 5 years.
Right, but you got to that number, which is not around $30 million. It's $30,570,000 by adding things up. So I'd like, so you mentioned the earthquake safety piece. It just seems to me that in previous years we've had more of a potential breakout, even though recognizing that things can change around. And as I'm looking through the other urban renewal districts, I'm finding the same kind of summary rather than telling me what's in, what's considered out.
We can get you the detail on how we rolled up to that number. It is it's part of the Old Town Chinatown Action Plan kind of analysis that we've done, and it includes estimates for the current products in the pipeline, like PNCA. Their loan dollars are included in there, and we have some other active loans and then some opportunity funds. So we can get you that detail on how we arrived at those numbers.
And I would like that for all of the URAs, please.
Okay. Most of the URAs don't have the same estimate of projects for this number. It's the generally we project in round numbers how much in loan volume we might get. In Old Town, we can get you that because we actually do have both projects and projections that allow us to get to those numbers.
Patrick, on the reduction in the amount set aside for the post office, on the assumption that in our lifetime the post office moves to the airport and frees up that site, is there what is the practical impact of having half the available dollars for that project? How might that impact our ability to facilitate the relocation?
I think it reflects a different model for how the project would happen. The old model was PDC buys it, and we own it, and we may take some steps to make it more development ready, and then find either a developer or a user or a combination of users who would come in, and we would do individual projects with them. This number reflects working with a third party who would basically take the lead on finding the post office a new home, constructing that new home, and then in exchange they would get the post office property and cover whatever difference there was in value, and then our $30 million would be there to help either make that transaction happen, and or build out some of the infrastructure needed to make it development ready. So really the difference is we aren't part of the transaction of the sale of the post office property. This dollar amount reflects our investment in making development happen on the site. That scenario, particularly as the chair mentioned, with the uptick in the real estate markets, we think is quite realistic that we actually would have enough development interest to step out of the middle of that of the ownership in that.
And does this budget summary net out the money that we're giving to the county to build the new health department building?
That money is presumed to go out this year. So if you look at 13-14 in the left column, that's the $26.9 million.
And that's on the backside of Bud Clark Commons?
Yes.
And do you see, given the prospect of new development there and the 511 building, do you see in the near term an opportunity to develop the site you own to the east
Yes.
of the 511 building?
Yes, absolutely. We have a lot of interest in the downtown properties we own. That's certainly a property that has interest. I think we probably will expedite our putting that property out for bid, but I think we want to see what happens both with the 511 building coming online as well as the county building to see what type of uses we're looking for. I'd imagine it would be something complementary to both PNCA and the other activities that are around there. So
Mayor, as a process question, the public gets to testify today. Is there another opportunity for the public to testify on the Portland Development Commission budget?
At the board meeting, right?
So we have two more board meetings. We meet, our PC board meets the first week of June, and then the board meets again on the last week of June to approve the budget, assuming it gets approved by council. And council votes on the 2 weeks from today.
Yeah.
So I think we may need to continue this hearing, because in previous years there's been a listing of the potential projects for each of the urban renewal districts. You're going to get me the information, but we have to get the information to the public so that they know whether $30,570,000 is the right number.
I'm wondering if you're looking at the right document, because the financial summary that's in the appendix is very similar to what we have provided you in the past on a project-by-project basis where there are actually projects in place. That's what Patrick was saying. And I'll tell you, we start this process in January. It seems like we finish a budget. We start it all over again just a couple months later. Actually, we talk about it at the commission level as early as September. And there are several commission meetings where presentations are made and there are opportunities for communities to come and testify in front of us. So I can think of at least two occasions where we have had neighborhood or interested parties come to the commission meetings as we were discussing putting this together. In addition, and you will be hearing from them today, we have the neighborhood advisory group, which has gone through this in detail and has approved it, made their suggestions, approved it, and also the Central City group that have done that. So there have been quite a few opportunities, actually, for folks to take a look at this and come in front of our commission and comment on it.
Thank you. That's helpful for you to direct my attention to the back of the pamphlet. As you know, I just got this yesterday, so
right.
I haven't had. When was it published for the community?
Well, this version of the River District budget is basically the same budget that's been out there since we published it the first week of February when we provided it first to council.
Thank
so the one URA budget that's probably most changed from that time is the interstate budget, and that's a result of the $20 million. But pretty much every other URA budget that you're looking at is what's been out there since the first week of February.
And then we're having the public process to look at the changes in the North McAdam District and possibly Central mm-hmm. East Side. So we would be accepting the budget or adopting the budget as it is now, and then there would be changes as a result of that process. Is that how?
Yeah, I probably should have clarified that up front. None of the proposed urban renewal area changes are really impact the 14-15 budget that you're looking at and you're approving. The forecast is just a forecast. Nobody approves a forecast. It's mainly to have it out there in the public and so people can anticipate projects that have more than 1 year attached to them. So there really isn't any change associated with that. The YURA budget is probably the one that does, and it's just reflecting that we're not getting any resources, but typically we haven't spent the money, so there isn't really any impact there. But the resources aren't different in River District or in the other impacted districts.
Thank you.
And then we tried to tell you what the other key changes are, just the carry forwards, because in February we wouldn't be sure that PNCA loan wouldn't go out in this fiscal year. So we wait till this point to be accurate, get it out of last year's budget into this year's budget. Those are the big projects that move forward.
And then the other piece of information, in this big line item, the commercial real estate line item that is at $31.5 million for next year in River District, 13 of that is the PNCA loan. So that's roughly $20 million of different loans. 13 of it we anticipate will go out in 14-15. The rest of it is programmed as opportunity funds. We have two projects in the pipeline, I think, that are totaling maybe $10+ million, but the rest of it really is all speculative and kind of an estimate of loan volume, and in the future years of that as well. Before I move on to the next year, I just want to point out that we do have Union Station listed here. We continue to work on Union Station, but it does remain a significant, I don't know if liability is the right word, but we own it, and it has significant deferred maintenance, and so we will continue to try and find resources for that project. Right now, we have money from the federal government that we have some contribution in, and it's mainly around the engineering, kind of planning and engineering for the renovation of the facility, but it does not include money for any of the renovation work. Next, urban renewal area, just because it's related to the Old Town Chinatown work, is downtown waterfront. Downtown waterfront, as you know, is a closed out urban renewal area. And let me just, before I go further, let me just give you the exact page. That's page 117 in the budget book. So we're showing about $13 million in resources. What's left in downtown waterfront is really money that is remaining proceeds from previous bond sales, as well as any kind of land sales and repayments of loans, that kind of thing. Much of this money is focused on Old Town Chinatown as well. That's kind of the remaining piece of downtown waterfront. And so we do have $6 million programmed in for loans there. That's a round number. That's mainly a forecast for what the loan volume would be. We do have property like 8L in the downtown waterfront. That's the property next to the OCOM building that is scheduled to sell and have development on that. And so that would be those would be resources that would come back into downtown waterfront for us to do. To do additional deals. Should be also be noted that I think the property for the next startup PDX challenge is in downtown waterfront in the Skidmore area as well.
Patrick, excuse me. Long week. What, any update on Third and Oak?
Not on Third and Oak. We continue to explore options with the a party that we have the obligation to. We haven't been able to make any progress on kind of closing out that obligation, so we're looking at potential uses for the property, but any uses would involve us building the minimum amount of parking required there. So that's still kind of an open question.
Is there some market interest in that site?
It's a difficult site with the obligation on it. My guess is that if we were to go out within the next year with a fairly generous offer for it, we probably could find interest. But it would probably be revive conversations from the past about what it's worth. If you recall, 10 years ago, we put it out and it was worth less than zero. It might be that if we want to dispose of the property, we would have to propose a similar deal. But we're not there yet. So. The other property in downtown waterfront that will go out shortly is Third and Taylor. We own, and that will go out for a competitive solicitation this month, and we expect there to be significant interest in that property. So the next URA, we're jumping around based on we think level of interest is Interstate. I've already talked a little bit about Interstate, but we can dig into a little bit more. Interstate is let's see, just make sure I give you the right page here. 122. So as I mentioned, the movement of the $20 million into the housing line item required us to shift around resources from our previous forecasts. The bulk of that came from our business finance line item. So we've had opportunity funds in our business lending line item, and so that's roughly $6 million is what's being shifted out of that line item. We've also shifted money out of reduced money in two different streetscape projects. So Commissioner Fritz, you and I talked yesterday, and I have more updated information on this. So it's not exactly what I reported yesterday. There's roughly $3 million that have come out of what was an $8 million worth of infrastructure work on both Killingsworth and Lombard. That's funding the so that's going towards the $20 million. We also have a reduction in our kind of grant programs. So we used to have $8.5 million. We're down to about $6 million in grant programs. And then there's additional resources that we brought to the URA, as well as a reduction in overhead that gets us to the $20 million number. We would have the ability to move more money forward, to borrow more money is the more technical way to talk about it. If we see needs arise, particularly on the business finance side or commercial real estate side, so this is mainly to get our forecast to balance. But for next year, I think we have all of our priorities funded, and then we can return to this question in the next budget cycle and just consistently reevaluate what the priorities are for the district. But we do have borrowing capacity within interstate, so we're not without options should needs change or things accelerate.
Since we don't have an urban renewal committee in interstate anymore, which groups have you reviewed the proposed shiftings of infrastructure?
So we good morning, Commissioner. So we convened some longtime stakeholders, so people who sat on the urban renewal advisory committees when we first came out. With basically an unbalanced budget, to just say this is with the additional $20 million. Here are some of the decisions that we could make. So Walter Valenta and Sheila Holden and Steve Rupert, people who've been involved for a long time, and they provided us some input. And then we took it to our Neighborhood Economic Development Budget Advisory Committee, and they provided additional input as well. So what you'll hear today from our advisors is, I think, that they're comfortable with where we are, but that they're comforted by the fact that we could bring additional resources if there are other projects.
Thank you.
So just you can see it on the slide. Some of the priorities as we go forward in the coming year in interstate include, as Chair Andrews mentioned, we're finishing out the Daimler loan. Daimler is moving forward on that project. Quite excited about that. We're completing Dawson Park. There will be some remaining expenditures on Dawson Park. Some of the streetscape work that I mentioned, we will hopefully be moving forward on the project that we call MLK South, but it's the Trader Joe's property. But we do believe that there's likely to be a development happen there, and we believe we anticipate making an investment in support of local businesses in that project, is in addition to the investment of our land in that project. So that's why it's a budget item. And then we continue to work with a group of long-term property owners in North and Northeast Portland. These are individuals and organizations that have owned property for years, and we're providing assistance and potentially, some capital to help them redevelop their properties and retain ownership of that and benefit from what's happening in North and Northeast Portland. Next URA is we have the Convention Center URA paired up with this, just because of the discussion around the shift of affordable housing dollars in the Convention Center. So we have talked about the $20 million increase in the interstate URA. On the Convention Center side, we are actively talking with Commissioner Saltzman and the Portland Housing Bureau about a corresponding shift of both resources and property back from the affordable housing side back into the redevelopment side. The logic behind that has been that given the the redraw of the map of the Orvik Convention Center urban renewal area, we took out many of the opportunity areas that I think were targeted for affordable housing, and they moved into interstate. And so the opportunities within the Convention Center urban renewal area are much fewer as a result. And so the dollars have been more challenging to get out. I know that the Portland Housing Bureau has been actively working on different ways to get those dollars out there. And so I do think this is something we're still trying to figure out what the right use of dollars is.
Well, I guess this is probably the appropriate point just to go on the record. I want to say that, you know, speaking as commissioner in charge of the Housing Bureau, we are not necessarily agreed at this point to transfer set aside resources from OCC to commercial activities. We are okay with the property transfer, but not okay with the $6 million. So is that shown anywhere in your budget?
So this budget, the Oregon Convention Center budget does reflect this transfer of the $6 million. So there is opportunity to change that before the budget gets finalized. Once again, let me help you get caught up here on this.
Is that on page 116?
Yeah, page 116.
Under general, there's a $6 million line item. So that reflects a transfer from housing to general. So I guess, you know, I'm not prepared to support that at this point. So what do I need to do to correct that?
I think we'll take direction from council on that. So before we finalize the budget, we can.
So that would be an amendment to be offered at the next reading, or
to
be offered today.
We would whatever council directs us to do today, we can go back and make changes to the budget that gets presented to.
I think for your
vote on the 28th. So
yeah, I just think there's been a lot of change in the OCC in terms of housing development, American Asset Trust being the most noteworthy development, and they are contemplating a phase two development, and I've had conversations with them about making some of phase two affordable. So that $6 million of housing set aside in the OCC area could be a possible way to help secure that affordability in their phase two development. So that's just one example,
right,
I think, of possible opportunities to do affordable housing within that boundary.
Let me, as the former housing commissioner, let me support Commissioner Saltzman's proposal, but let me also add that if at some point a portion of the set-aside does migrate to interstate, it would be my position, if it nets out that way, it would be my position that is set-aside money and not money for some other purpose. So I'd prefer it stay in this district, but if it does migrate and net out, then that is clearly, in my judgment, set-aside money.
So, once again, happy to take direction on council. I just to put out there the what we're facing in the convention center is a closed district, finite resources. So the debt, last remaining debt's been issued, and we're now looking at some projects that are still left to be completed. The most notable one is the Veterans Memorial Coliseum. Right now we have about $20 million budgeted. That's carrying forward. Once again, OMF is taking another look at that project. I think by all accounts, people are saying we don't, even with the investment of the Winterhawks, we don't have enough money to make the facility what people think it should be to have it be a useful life. So it's likely that the city will be looking at an additional investment for that project. So that's just one potential use of the dollars. And frankly, I think the city would have to think about where those additional dollars come from if they don't come from tax increment financing. And then the second thing is we do have potential for mixed-use projects in the convention center. I think we all can picture the landscape around the convention center. A lot of vacant properties, PDC owns a number of them. So there are opportunities for additional mixed-use projects that could accomplish both objectives, redevelopment objectives as well as affordable housing objectives. So I think it's not meant to be kind of a hard either or line. It's trying to figure out, given the remaining needs of this district, how best to use the remaining dollars of the district. And that's the proposal that we have out there. So I just wanted to, that's
Patrick,
kind of our
if,
case
if,
for it.
If you were to follow Commissioner Saltzman's lead and maintain this as a line item, at what point would you be coming back to us saying that you may have a hole in the Coliseum financing?
That's really the process is really in OMF's hands. So I think we're
probably three
we
to six
We already
months
do
away.
Have a hole. Yeah, it's right. just a question of how big it is.
Right.
We know we but don't
point,
have.
But there's no deal. There's no proposal.
Right. There's no proposal. But we have not seen a scenario that anyone thinks is compelling using the resources we have now. Almost anyone.
So, I mean, it could be an issue in which we leave the money as is, maybe put it in 15-16 and say we can come back and have council can have a conversation when it knows really what its financial obligation or the likely financial obligation is on the Veterans Memorial Coliseum and then make the decision at that time. I mean, I don't know that there's a project pending. Maybe the AAT's opportunity will happen quickly, and so that will be a need. The other $7 million that's programmed in the affordable housing side, I don't know the timeline of that. It may be that that money isn't going to go in 14-15. So it could be that this is a conversation we can have at a later date or when we have a better information on the needs of the Coliseum. So now moving to Lentz. Before I go ahead, let me make sure I give you the right page number. Page 124. So now I think we're moving from the URAs where we've kind of really moved money around, and there's been some significant conversations about priorities to a URA where we really have a lot going on across the board. I think the thing to point out is that with the Lentz Action Plan, we've really focused our redevelopment activities around the Lentz Town Center. So those of you who have received our briefing on it can picture kind of the map of the Lentz Urban Renewal Area. So the redevelopment work is really mainly in Lentz Town Center. So the projects that we will be moving forward, whether they be properties that PDC owns, and we own quite a few, or other properties, it's in Lentz Town Center, with some of it focused on the area around 72nd and Foster, right around where the Portland Mercado is located. And that's another project that we will be moving forward in the coming year. In addition to the redevelopment work, we continue to have infrastructure works, mainly streetscape, sidewalk and safety improvements, both on the Foster, West Foster corridor, so the area west of Lentz Town Center, as well as additional work on 122nd. So this will come together more clearly when we come to council at the end of May with the Lentz action plan. But much of what you see here is in support of that plan, and primarily redevelopment plan. Any questions on Lentz?
Patrick, yeah. I look at page 124, and it looks like there's very, very little money available, even through 18-19, for affordable housing rental. So there's home repair, home buyer. These are consistent with the priorities, but it's really not until 16-17 you have 350. So that's fairly constrained, I would say.
Yeah, I think the breakdown of the housing dollars is really we take direction from PHP on how they have the dollars programmed. I'm just looking back on the set aside calculation for Lentz, and while I know that we have the floor ceiling conversation, there you know we've been trending well above 30% in Lentz, and so there is a little bit of kind of you know catch up on the redevelopment side that's going on in terms of the total resource picture for the set aside.
Other questions about Lentz? Okay.
So next, Central East Side. Central East Side is one of our more constrained URAs in terms of resources. With the potential expansion, we would stretch out the resource picture, but it doesn't fundamentally change the annual resource picture in the Central East Side. Now we're talking about page 113. So the work that's happening in the Central East Side, we're completing the Burnside Bridgehead redevelopment. That's our expenditure is primarily done on that part. This is the build out of the parcels that we've owned, and we have active projects on all all of those parcels, and those property sales will result in resources coming back into the district to allow us to put that into other projects. And in, like I said, in a resource constrained ERA like this one, it's important to get money back from some of these properties. One of the main areas that we're looking at is the acquisition of the ODOT blocks. We continue to work constructively with ODOT, and I think we would hope that by the end of the year we could complete that acquisition. So that plan there is for PDC to buy those properties and then pursue redevelopment on the portion of the properties that can be developed on. So that would be the most significant use of dollars in our Central East Side. If you look on the first page, 113, moving down near the bottom, you see the $5 million line item. That really represents the ODOT blocks and the dollars that we would need to put into there and potentially to begin some kind of redevelopment on that site. We are actively working on, I think, as you probably know, on the area right next to the expansion area and hopefully soon into the expansion area around the redevelopment possibilities that can happen as a result of the new light rail line. So we're working with our Bureau colleagues, including the Fire Bureau, around the potential redevelopment of their training site. But there's a lot of different opportunity areas within there. And so right now it's mainly master planning. But I think pretty quickly, hopefully within the next year, we'll be talking about actual projects within that part of the district.
Patrick, could you just hold forth for a minute on the question, when you have light rail lines going in and when you have stations, won't there be all sorts of incentive for private developers to step up and develop the heck out of that area? So why would we need public funds to assist with development around light rail stations?
So I think the main, and I'm sure the other folks would have an opinion on that, so I'll just start looking right at the mayors. I think the main thing, and if we look historically at how it's happened elsewhere, is to attract the kind of development that we want to see happen, and we want dense development that really takes advantage of the presence of light rail. We don't want it to just be kind of the first development that can happen there or kind of the lowest use for those properties. So I think that's the main reason why you do that. So you set the stage for denser development. The unique twist on the Central East Side is that we actually want it to be a jobs district, and the zoning, the update to the plan will, I think, confirm that there might be some flexibility around the transit station. So we might need to put dollars to work to get the kind of development that we want to support the industrial firms that are there or other kind of small firms that are there. If we left it to its own and we didn't have this kind of zoning controls, we might just see a lot of residential development and price appreciation, and that would begin to change the character in the district. So I think our dollars, from a strategic standpoint, might go into helping maintain some of that badly needed industrial space around the transit centers. There's other projects. I mean, I know the parks is thinking about how they're around the transit centers, so there could be other opportunities that would make use of our money.
Thank you. I mean, I figured that was the answer, but I thought it's worth mentioning in this public forum.
And the Fire Bureau site has some, there's no, the grid doesn't, we have to kind of reestablish the grid. There's some infrastructure issues, so there are some technical things we need to fix on it.
Yeah, the infrastructure issue is the other thing. There is it's got the infrastructure of an old industrial district, which is what it is, and that's not what it's going to be. So not only do we get the kind of development that we want, but what public goods do we want out of this redevelopment, and how much are we willing to put in public funds to get public goods, whether it's street trees or a community center or whatever. And so those are open questions, but it's not just that we have to subsidize deals to make them happen in the hottest place in the city, but how do we get what we want for the community?
Right. If I could just follow up on that, my recollection, Patrick, is that we've never really spent a lot of time developing the framework for how we want to develop these sites on Portland-Milwaukee light rail. Is that fair?
Doing it now.
Now the horse has left the barn. A lot of the dirt's been turned over two or three times because people, I'm talking about 5 years ago when this was birthed, and we could anticipate. So now the dirt is more expensive. There's a lot of speculation going on. How how at this late date do we make sure that we have a set of values guiding a framework? So, for example, we can be opportunistic and look at dents and certain kinds of jobs, but we might also say we want to make sure there's a certain stock of housing, and, mm-hmm. and it may be workforce. It mm-hmm. may be something else, mm-hmm. but we want that adjacent to a transit stop because that will encourage people not to have a car. And we want certain kinds of jobs that are compatible with that. Mm-hmm. I can see us being very opportunistic here, but I would be helpful for me to have a framework for thinking about how we do this. And is there a framework we can point to?
You know, we had an interesting meeting with Planning and Sustainability about a month ago. The two boards got together, and it was an opportunity to get to understand what each of us do and how we do it. And we focused on Central East Side and the potential expansion as kind of the project to use as the key. And they're really ahead of us in terms of the process. I mean, they are looking at this particular district and will come back to the city, obviously, with suggestions in terms of what you do from a transportation standpoint, in terms of street parking access, as well as the zoning question. So I think that is the forum where you get to shape what it is that you want to see in these particular districts. Until there's a modification, there's a bunch of that light rail that isn't in a PDC urban renewal district, right? It's outside of it. So I think the first piece is to get that that zoning piece, the planning piece in place.
And that, you know, Central City Plan is actively, that's what they're going to address in this. And so the Southeast Quadrant piece of that is an active conversation around it. The other thing is, first, Lincoln Station is the DoubleTree side, or that's what I call it, University Place. PSU controls that, so we have an institutional partner there that has significant control over that transit stop. The next stop is OMSI, significant institutional partner that controls what happens there. The third stop, the Clinton Street stop, is a little bit more disparate property ownership, but we have two major landowners between the city and Stacey and Whitbeck, which owns the second half of this triangle. So I don't think the horse is completely out of the barn, because I think the fact that we have major landowners, and two of them are institutional partners, gives us a chance. I mean, OMSI's doing a master plan. It's a perfect chance to work with OMSI on what's the vision for everything around that stop. The PSU, the agreement we have with PSU, this is the centerpiece of it, is how we plan around that station. So I think we still have a lot of opportunity to impact what happens along the line.
Yeah, I guess I just the part that feels different is we've been so intentional in the past around different parts of our plan, no net loss downtown, where we put our Todd program and other things, and we're going to make the best judgments we can, but we don't have a framework that says our aspiration is this percentage of housing, this percentage of certain kinds of jobs, or and so it's going to be, and it's happening fairly late in the game where we're now going to have second, third-generation property owners, speculators, looking to leverage off of. And we didn't really have a chance 5 years ago to think about how we might change the zoning then to capitalize on now. So it feels – this is not a criticism. It's a lament, because I
think you should ask – I think whenever you get next brief on the Central City Plan, I think you should ask this question. I mean, they probably are addressing some of these, maybe not all of your issues, but I think they're addressing – more than you might realize.
And
I think
are they bringing the Housing Bureau into this discussion?
Yeah, I mean, they're part of the, yeah. I mean, it's the Central City Plan is a, yeah, I mean, all the bureaus are involved. The housing question on the Central East Side is a big question. So the OMSI and Clinton Street stations in particular, one of the fundamental questions that we're trying to answer is what is the role of housing in that development agenda there? So it's an active conversation that we're having.
Well, and I guess, you know, as you know, we accelerated the planning process. We brought in the Urban Land Institute. They're working with PDC and the Planning Bureau and Transportation to fast-track the planning questions. But I guess I don't have a lament yet, because the thing to lament in an urban renewal district is the underdevelopment that happens just before you get the plan done. And that hasn't happened in this case, because it's still mostly zoned industrial. So nobody's built a dumb strip mall where we think we ought to have smart development. And those are the ones that we really kick ourselves for. Right. And fortunately, that's not happening here, because we haven't gotten around to changing the zoning. So because we don't, and we have, yeah, well, you're right, we have a few speculators and flippers, but mostly we have long-term property owners who've held this property and are planning it. So I have a much more sanguine view of this situation in that we are now doing the planning, and PDC and transportation housing are involved, and nobody's put one brick on top of another yet.
Yeah, we can. I mean, I think we should come back and present on what, and whether it's the big plan or the small slice within the Southeast Quadrant, and what the conversation is, because it's touching on a